Well, welcome everyone again to the Horsing Around podcast here on DenverBroncos.com. Of course, our main man, Andrew Mason, is with us, but he's down in Mobile, Alabama, taking in the Senior Bowl. So I'm Andy Lindahl, your Broncos sideline reporter. May's still full of content for us today, but again, he's out traveling, so I'm going to kind of take the lead ship. But first and foremost, Mason, how are you? How's Mobile?
It's good. A lot warmer than Denver was this week. Bursting with the usual seafood it always has. I had oysters at three different dinners this week. So that I should tell you what kind of week it is.
Yeah, well, as we all well know, there's a little bit of, there's a lot of business and a little bit of fun that goes into every one of these NFL road trips. Just kind of tell everybody your thoughts about the week down there. I've got a couple of the tidbits that, of course, it always seems like rumors are breaking, even though we're far away from the player acquisition phase. But it starts with the draft, and that's what you're for sure of. You're for sure you have picks. You're for sure you can scout these prospects. What did you see that would interest the Broncos down at the Senior Bowl?
Well, I mean, let's start with the strength of not only the Senior Bowl, but I think the strongest position in this entire draft class, and that's tight end. I mean, I think you get you go through the tight ends in Mobile, and you know O.J. Howard of Alabama looks like he's going to be a first round pick, maybe even first half of the first round. And then you've got some second tier guys like Mike Roberts of Toledo, John Smith of Florida International, Evan Engram from Mississippi. Even a guy is kind of a sleeper, but had a good week out of South Alabama, and that's Gerald Everett. He probably needs to put on some weight, but all those guys, certainly as pass catchers, they look like they could step in and contribute right away, and some of them start right away. And then you throw guys who weren't there, like Jake Butt out of Michigan with torn ACL, Bucky Hodges from Virginia Tech. Jordan Leggett from Clemson, Davey Njoku from Miami. You throw those guys in there, and you're looking at a class that it may well be the 83 quarterbacks of tight ends. And then you get beyond that, some decent mid-round offensive linemen. I think down there I could see Taylor Moton out of Western Michigan sneaking into the second day. Forrest Lamp is one guy who really had a good week. Western Kentucky tackle and guard. They were even against work at center, but he had a high ankle sprain. But in the time he practiced, I think cemented what a lot of good things that people thought about him. And then and also some inside linebackers. I think that could be a strong point, and some good defensive linemen as well. So balanced across the board. One thing I'll say. Good thing the Broncos took care of a young quarterback last year, because this is not the draft to go get one.
Yeah, and that we'll have to talk about the quarterbacks here in a second, because as you know, apparently in Denver, it's never not going to be a topic is the quarterback position, I guess, as long as you and I are doing this anyway, because it seems like as long as I've known you, we've been talking about a quarterback. Andrew, why, Jeff Legwald told me earlier in the week, I'm going to lead the witness a little bit here, that the reason why the Senior Bowl is so important is that it shows your scouting staff that you care about what they do and you know that what they do is important. Do you take that same point of view? Because let's be honest, the Senior Bowl is for seniors, and most of your first-round picks are usually, not all the time, but usually underclassmen because they're just that good and they need to go out and take advantage of their high draft stock. Why is the Senior Bowl important in your mind?
Well, that's a great point about the importance of what the scouts do, because, The scouts are on the lead edge of contact with the players. I mean, usually, the scout in the region, he's had contact with the player, well before even the step in the process. You can probably go there. Like, he's usually, making contact at practices during the season, at game, after games, things like that. So what it does, though, I mean, teams get a chance to do a lot of interviews. Like at the scouting combine, you're limited to 60 players in interviews. You have the only limit you have at the Senior Bowl is on time. You don't have a limit on players, so you're able to get a good head start on those group interviews. Of course, you've got John Elway down there, Matt Russell down there, so they can you can get the interviews involved with people who are you know close to the top of the organization. And then the other thing I think, yes, you're not talking about top 10, top 15 picks for the most part, although you know Carson Wentz played his way up to number 2 overall with a good week in Mobile last year, and Eric Fisher from Kansas City ended up as the number 1 overall pick coming out of the Senior Bowl. But what this week does, I think, it separates, it gives you some separation when you get to anywhere from late round 1 right on to the 7th round, because you're able to get a week of these guys and see how they prepare, how they grow from day to day with NFL teaching for the first time, because you've got a couple of NFL staffs and the Bears and the Browns that are down there running things. You know, once you get past the top 10, top 15, it sometimes gets muddled. And what you see down there this week in terms of how they players respond to the teaching and also just how they do against each other. You know, if you're coming from, say, FCS, if you're coming from a group of 5 conference, you're not seeing the same level of talent on a day-to-day basis, week-to-week basis, as you are if you're at Alabama, Auburn, you know, Oklahoma, you know, Pac-12, et cetera. So I think that's why you often see the guys that are the big risers being the ones out of Group of 5 and FCS schools, because you're seeing them against a higher level of competition, and they've stepped up in class and shown what they have.
So, Andrew, you talked about how great this tight ends class is. How big a priority do you think that becomes for the Broncos? You talked about there's so many of them, and when you relate it to the quarterback class of 83, it speaks for itself for those of us well familiar with how many good quarterbacks came out of that class, the likes of Jim Kelly, Dan Marino, John Elway, obviously, Todd Blackledge, maybe not quite as well known, Tony Eason in that group as well. But talk to everybody, kind of define for maybe the younger listeners to this podcast, what in your mind makes this tight ends class as good as that quarterback class of 83?
Well, it's the depth of talent. I mean, obviously, you've got guys at the top there in terms of O.J. Howard from Alabama. The big issue for him is consistency of performance, although, you know, Alabama did not use him as much as they should have, and I think the fact that they targeted him more in the last 2 national championship games, which are the only 200-yard games that he's had in the last 2 years at Alabama, I think that says a lot about his ability to step up in class. You know, you just got to get some more consistency out of him. But the talent, I mean, he's 6'6", 249, so the size is there as well. I think part of it is just the quality of the group and the fact that you're looking at a horde of potential starters, but also I think just the timing of it. We are in an era at this moment where the tight end has never been more valuable to a team's passing game as a target. And you know, you look around the league and you see Travis Kelce and you see, you know, Jordan Reed and of course Rob Gronkowski in New England. A lot of the offenses that are separating themselves as time goes on have that threat, that tight end who is a good enough pass catcher to split out and play wide receiver, but also has enough power to line up on the inside. And then becomes a matchup nightmare for a defense. Do you put a corner on him and take your chances with a size disadvantage? Do you put an inside linebacker on him and then you worry about a speed disadvantage and a quickness disadvantage? These tight ends have become unique weapons in the NFL, and I think it's fortuitous that you have this kind of class at this point in time when teams are more and more figuring out creative ways to use the tight end.
You know, Andrew, I think it's so interesting because obviously there's a lot of talk about Christian McCaffrey, and that's a kid I'd love to see the Broncos add because I just think he's one of these multifaceted weapons that could help you in so many areas, including your special teams. And I've heard some people recently say, you know, well, with Christian McCaffrey, you can get him in the 2nd round, maybe even the 3rd and 4th round. I think with what Atlanta's done and with what New England has done, and people will point to in specifics with their backs, you know, Tavon, Tevin Coleman, and the backs that they have and the kid out of New England. They got all those guys in the middle rounds. But I think once you identify how you can use weapons like that, when you look at a Christian McCaffrey, maybe years ago he'd have gone in the middle rounds. I think now that offensive coordinators have been given the roadmap on really how to use him, that's a kid that I bet, and maybe some others like him that aren't even on my radar right now, those are the kids that will probably go higher than they used to, wouldn't you think, because now NFL offensive coordinators have some great ideas on how to use him.
Yeah, and the thing, and with Christian, and he's like some of those tight ends, and that you're talking about somebody that creates matchup problems that you have that a defense on a play-by-play basis has to know where that guy is and has to worry about accounting for them and maybe adjusting their plan a little bit. And the thing with tight ends, you know, like I mentioned, there's so many of them. It's just a question of when that run starts. You know, does that run start unusually early in round one, or is it going to be a run in round two or round three? The depth of the class, maybe. I look at, you know, no offense to O.J. Howard, as good as he is, but Mike Roberts from Toledo, you know, might be better physically. He has some work to do as a blocker, but at 261 pounds, I think he's certain and you know, a very ripped build. I think he's got the ability, and he's a willing blocker, if not a technically sound blocker just yet. I think the technical part can come in time, but you can get a guy like him in round three, whereas there's only one Christian McCaffrey in this draft, but there's actually a bunch of tight ends. So maybe even, you know, the teams that are looking at tight ends are going to wait for round two or round three, and McCaffrey ends up in round one because he is such a unique weapon that really doesn't that doesn't parallel with anybody else in this class or a lot of classes for that matter.
Well, you pair that with Mike McCoy, I'm already ready to say it. I know we still got to go through combine, so on and so forth. But right now, I hope the Broncos could find a way to add a Christian McCaffrey. Because like you said, there's only one of him. You know, with an A.J. Derby, look, if you could get O.J. Howard and all that, we'd all be in favor of that. Or maybe the other tight end that you just mentioned. But for me, Christian McCaffrey is one of a kind, and you put him with Mike McCoy's mind, and you saw some of the stuff they were doing. I hate the comparison because Christian's bigger, more durable, and I think, frankly, can give you more than a Danny Woodhead or someone like that. But that's how, when you just look at the Mike McCoy scheme to do a plug-and-play or kind of a switch out of a guy that McCoy used in so many different areas, that is, at this point, Danny Woodhead, even though Christian is much bigger than that. He's an over 200-pound kid. I've met him. I've been around him this offseason. I hope the Broncos could add him into the mix. We'll have to wait and see how the draft boards start to fall. Any quarterbacks out there that you think are going to be good prospects and any that maybe are overdraftable right now? I mean, Deshaun Watson's going to be fascinating to watch. But where do you think this quarterback class falls? Because you already said right now, you don't think there's maybe a great young one out there. How do you think this thing goes?
Well, I think you start with Deshaun Watson, and I mean, he's not a perfect young quarterback by any means. There's a lot of technical work that he has to do, but certainly has enough arm and we see his presence and his poise under pressure. You know, I think he's the guy that he may get overdrafted top five or even number one overall. But I think if you put him at the right spot, I think it would be about 10 to 15. But, you know, then you get beyond him. You know, I have a lot of questions about Mitch Trubisky out of North Carolina. Only started 1 year and didn't like what happened when things went askew on him. A lot of people may just excuse the weather because he had a bad game for Carolina against Virginia Tech. And that was when Chapel Hill got sideswiped by the hurricane going up the eastern seaboard, and so it was windy and rainy and it was uncomfortable. But between that and the pressure defense that Trubisky faced that day, he just melted down. It was the worst game of his season, the worst game of Carolina's season. And I look at that, and I think, okay, I hear that, you know, Chicago is very high on Trubisky, potentially at number three. Well, how often is the weather going to be kind, and how many defenses are going to mount pressure on him? So I hear the Bears really like Trubisky at three, but I have my doubts about him as even a top 20 quarterback, to be honest with you.
All right, let's wrap it up on this, Andrew, because we got a lot of time to talk about draft prospects and player acquisition, and, you know, that's what the offseason is. The Tony Romo thing just won't go away. John Elway and Tony Romo seen at Trump's inauguration. I guess I'm stuck constantly, and I do it on my Orange Herd podcast, which you can hear on the app. It's not that I don't like Tony Romo. It's not that I don't respect his career. But honestly, for me, the back injury is a major concern, and him staying healthy is a major concern. And the easiest path to get Tony Romo, in my mind, is a trade, which is going to cost you $25 million this year, $25 million, I believe, next year, $18 million the year after that. He's got a ton of dead money if the Cowboys trade him. There's been cases in the past where you try to transfer some of the dead money. It just all seems so complicated to me. Should Bronco fans, in your mind, should they think about this guy as much as we are? Should it be the topic of conversation at this point as much as it is? And are, if you're in favor of it, tell me why you like the idea so much.
Well, I'm not in favor of it, and I think it's something that probably should get a little less attention and conversation. But talking about the quarterback position, and people, when there's not clarity at the quarterback position, and when you don't have an elite to very good quarterback, you're always talking about, okay, what are the other possibilities there at this point? But with Tony Romo, you mentioned the cap hit, and look, that's money you need to work on other positions, defensive line, offensive line, and that's relevant for Tony Romo, given the litany of back issues that he's had in recent years. If you go out and get Tony Romo, and then you're not using that money to upgrade some spots along the offensive line, then you're basically you might be sentencing Tony Romo to a similar fate to the one that he suffered the last 2 years in Dallas when he had injuries. The first one, you know, the back stuff in 15 in his season, then he had the injury he suffered in preseason that opened the door for Dak Prescott. So that's why I don't really think that's logical. And look, I mean, if you bring in Tony Romo, you'd be saying, oh, it's the final piece, get over the hump, blah, blah, blah. Well, you're not talking about Peyton Manning, who has a long history of success in the postseason, already had a Super Bowl win. You're talking about a guy who has never played in a conference championship game, who's 2-4 lifetime as a playoff starter. Obviously, there were other factors involved, but I just don't see a Tony Romo as the final piece of the puzzle that some people see.
So let's I guess we'll wrap it up on this because we got into this. I got into this with Ed McCaffrey on our show. Runs 10-1 on Denver Sports 760. If you'd like to listen to it, we'd love to have you during the day. Catch it on iHeartRadio. But honestly, Andrew, I guess for me, watching those championship games this weekend, you know what it did for me, and maybe I'm in the minority here, but I kind of always put Ben Roethlisberger just outside of the class of Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. Watching the two go head-to-head this weekend, and maybe it's not fair, but we do this to quarterbacks all the time, so I'm going to go ahead and do it. Ben is not there. Ben is further out of the neighborhood than I thought. Ben's further down the block. Watching Tom Brady in total control with what I thought was a lesser offensive cast than what Ben Roethlisberger had to work with. And granted, he lost Le'Veon Bell fairly early, but it was the Steelers line getting praised for doing so well, not the Patriots line as much heading into that game. I guess there's just a calmness and a readiness to Tom Brady, and it really made me realize how special the battle between Manning and Brady really was for all those years. And to be honest with you, man, if Brady and Manning don't meet up in the same era of football, both those guys probably have a lot more Super Bowl credits than they do right now. They're probably both wearing more jewelry than they have in the past or than they have currently. And really, I don't know how you feel, but even the Elis and everybody else, Rodgers is close but not quite there yet. Tom Brady and Peyton Manning really were a special class, and we are really watching the end of a very special era and a very personal kind of rivalry between the two, aren't we?
Yeah, and I mean, you look at Tom Brady versus Peyton Manning in the playoffs. You know, Tom Brady's teams got knocked out of the postseason 3 times by Peyton Manning's teams. And that right there illustrates your example about you know, what would Tom Brady have done, and how many rings would he have without Peyton Manning in there, and how, and And I do wonder how many rings that Peyton Manning would have had without Tom Brady. Of course, the Colts had a habit of losing to other teams in the playoffs, and then the Broncos, you know, had some troubles in the postseason. That, you know, they did lose to the Colts in the playoffs with Manning. They did lose to the Ravens in the playoffs with Manning. But the two of them, you know, Peyton Manning had four Super Bowl appearances. Tom Brady, I mean, it's just unfathomable. Seven. So 11 times in the last 16 years, one of those two is the quarterback of the AFC representative in the Super Bowl. It's not something we're going to see again. I mean, I think you have quarterbacks that are exceptional and very good. And I think you look at, you know, Aaron Rodgers, even though it didn't end well for him, he's an elite quarterback. Matt Ryan may have joined that class based on what he did this season. But, you know, those two, I mean, they were so far ahead. And now, you know, Brady's by himself with Peyton Manning retired. And who knows how long Brady's going to keep going now. He says he wants to play into his mid-40s. And that would certainly defy history. The one thing I will say is when the wall comes for quarterbacks, it comes sudden, it comes hard. Look what happened to Peyton Manning. I mean, Manning had the best season of his career at age 37, the first half of his age 38 season, and then starts to struggle late in that season, and then struggles all through his age 39 season when the Broncos had the great defense and won. So, you know, when we saw the wall come for Brett Favre, we saw the wall hit come for Dan Marino back in 1999. I think John Elway retired just before the wall came for him, and it's going to happen for Tom Brady. I mean, I certainly admire the fact that he says, "Oh, I'm fit till 45." I just don't see it happening. And they say, "Oh, he's playing so well." Well, Peyton Manning was playing exceptionally well in 2013, and it wasn't more than 12, 13 games after that season that his decline really began in earnest. And that's the way it's been for quarterbacks. And if Tom Brady manages to be any different, my goodness, mazel tov to him. It'll be amazing, but it'll be the exception to the rule.
Andrew, thanks so much for joining us again. Andrew joining us on assignment for Mobile, Alabama, and the Senior Bowl. We'll look forward to talking to you live, although you'll be bouncing around. You'll be at the Super Bowl next week, so we'll have a couple on assignment podcasts like this. But, Andrew, thanks for the time. I look forward to doing it again next week from the Super Bowl.
My pleasure. And, of course, with all respect to the Falcons and Patriots, the big story for the Broncos next week is going to be the Hall of Fame. And that's something that I think that's going to drive a lot of the conversation on your end as well, beyond the quarterback situation, because, boy, I really don't want to see the Broncos country reaction if the Broncos don't get a Hall of Famer this year.
I don't either, and I hope people will remember. You know what, since we can speak directly to them, we're both friends with Jeff Legwold, folks. Mm-hmm. Nobody puts in more time or effort to get these guys in, and if it doesn't happen, I want you to write to the ignorant East Coast voters who refuse to acknowledge the guys from the West. Do not take it out on Jeff, because Jeff doesn't deserve it. He's, believe me, putting his blood into this, trying to get these guys in that class.
Yeah, and he does a tremendous job. And, of course, on John Lynch, he's working with Ira Kaufman from Tampa. Ira, I almost said the Tampa Tribune, God rest his soul. It went out of business, but Ira's still writing down there for JoeBucksFan.com. And Ira takes the lead on that, but certainly Leggy's helped him out as well. And, you know, with John Lynch, I think it might be a little bit closer for him than for TD, although I want to see both get in, both deserve to get in. But with John Lynch, you know, people say, "Oh, he's not a Bronco." Well, he's in the Ring of Fame. He was a Pro Bowler four times. And you're not talking about John Lynch as a perennial Hall of Fame finalist and likely Hall of Famer in the near future without what he did in Denver.
The man speaks the truth. That's our guy, Andrew Mason. I'm Andy Lindahl. The whole Broncos podcast crew has more for you ahead here on the Horse and Round podcast.